Hello, welcome to the Nothing Is Real Radio Hour. We're going to hear two very different takes from very different times using home recording equipment. For the first half of the program, you'll hear a selection of sounds made on recordios back in the 1940s. Recordios were popularized by the Wilcox Gay Radio Component Company in 1939 during World War II and were used up into the 50s. Recordios eventually died out as reel-to-reel and cassette tapes were introduced. Recordios enabled the middle class to have access to a home record-cutting machine, which was essentially a turntable, sort of portable size, with a built-in AM radio and a microphone input, which could then be used to transfer sounds to 78 RPM discs. One version of the recordio, which included a radio, sold for $40 in 1941, which would roughly be equivalent to $600 now. People often gave the disc to friends and relatives as an early form of home recording as communication. We're now going to hear a variety of actual recordios. Many are anonymous. All share a crude, crackly, scratchy sound quality, so don't adjust your dial. The raw sound is part of the experience. You'll hear the mic being passed around with families, singing, news, piano, and people enjoying their new technology. Let's begin. This is the Moore family in Texas, just after Christmas, when it sounds like someone must have received their first recordio machine. I'll be back in about 30 minutes, and we'll then hear a contemporary take on home recording using digital technology and a homemade hydrophone mic. Until then, here's some recordios. Enjoy.
This is being recorded December the 28th, 1947 in the home of C.H. Moore in Crosby, Texas. On my right is his wife, Mrs. Moore, and one of his daughters, Mrs. Horace Rachel, and Mrs. Frank Moore, his daughter-in-law. On my left is one of his grandsons. I can't think of his name, but he's Arnold. And Donville is his grandson, and his oldest son is Ole Moore, and his son-in-law, Horace Rathel, and one of his other sons, Frank Moore. Mr. Moore is also standing in the door, and his youngest son, Riedel, is standing in the door. Say a few words, Ole. What kind of crop did you make this year?
Oh, pretty fair.
Nothing extra?
Nothing extra.
Do you dry land or irrigate?
Dry land all together.
Well, what do you say, about half bale an acre this time?
Something in the neighborhood of half bale.
Well, that's awful good for a year like we've had this year. What kind of crop did you make, Horace?
Made a gooder. What? Good crop, about a half bale.
You having any trouble getting together this time?
No, I was pretty lucky.
What did you use to get it? Machines or meshing? Hand labor together. Well, that's pretty good. What kind of crop do you make, Riedel?
Well, I made a dandy crop this year. Got out 110 bale already and get 4 or 5 more, make around a half bale.
Well, that's just pretty good for a dry year like this. In the summertime, didn't look like it make that much by a whole lot, did it? What kind of crop do you make, Horace? Frank?
Oh, I made a good one. We didn't have any rain after we planted. Made around a half a bale. Cheapest crop we've ever made.
Is that a fact?
And lots of them around made half a bale on just harrowing the cotton one time.
Is that a fact? How about the labor trouble gathering at this time?
We had plenty of labor help. No cotton waste.
Well, that's sure good. How about you?
This is Doyle. I made a pretty good crop this year. I had in about 300 acres. Made 139 and a half bales.
Well, that's just pretty good for dry land cotton, and the price it is, I'm sure you've really gone to town this year, I guess. A few words. What's your name?
I'm Ms. Frank Moore. I live in the Mount Blanco community. I have 3 boys, Frank Knox, Charles, and Mike. That's all I know to say.
Hand it over to your sister-in-law.
Well, I never have any trouble finding something to say. I know I just have to work all the time. I wish sometime I wasn't a farmer's wife, but anyway, I am. And I'm kind of glad of it.
Not bad here like this.
No, not bad. And here's my mother. Let her talk a little.
Well, that's mighty good. Here's a mighty pretty little girl I want to interview. What is your name?
Connie Sue.
Connie Sue. What's your daddy's name?
Daddy.
Daddy, huh? Here's a pretty little boy. What's your name?
Wayne.
Wayne who?
Clemens.
Wayne Clemens. Give me where you live and all about you.
I live in Texas.
And how old are you?
8.
Where do you go to school?
Uh-huh.
Where about you go to school?
Crossington, Texas.
Here's a little girl. What's your name?
Eurita.
Where do you live?
I live at Wake.
Eurita who?
Fleming.
Eurita Fleming. Oh, Eurita Fleming and Wayne Fleming are brothers and sisters.
Yes.
What's your name?
Georgia Gerlach.
Where do you live?
Live in Lakeville, Texas.
What's your name?
Oh, I don't know.
What's your name?
Frank Knox Moore.
Frank Knox Moore? What's your daddy's name?
Frank Moore.
Frank Moore. What's your name?
Leroy.
Leroy. Leroy who?
Rachel.
What's your name?
Charles N. Moore.
What's your daddy's name?
Frank Moore.
Frank Moore. You and this other little boy are brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine. What's your name?
Jimmy.
Jimmy who?
Jimmy Moore.
Mm-hmm. And what's your name? Okay, thank you. Your recorder is Fred Gerlach. Take up the rest of that record doing something.
My name is Charles Henry Moore. I was born and raised in Arkansas. My family was all raised in Arkansas. And my forefathers, my father was born in Texas and went to Arkansas about 1853. And my mother was born and raised in Arkansas on the Arkansas River. And I left there and come to Texas November the 26th,
1900.
Well, as our farming there was pretty rough, we used the Georgia stock mostly in my boyhood days, and land was rocky and rough up in around Hot Springs, Arkansas. We raised little cotton, corn, and hay, and mostly stock. We had lots of wild game there, such as squirrels, deer, and a few panthers and bear. My grandfather came there about 1860, just before the Revolution War. And he farmed and worked this thing and that thing all of his life. He died in 1890. Grandmother died in 1900. They both was around 84 years old. My father and mother also died on the same farm. That's about all.
When were you married?
I was married in 1902. I lived at the same place that I was born for 22 years. I married when I was about 25. Wife name? Lena Eads.
This date is December the 28th, 1947. It is being recorded in Crosby, Texas, in the home of C.H. Moore. All his children and grandchildren are here today, and we have just had a lovely dinner. Arvis and his wife and three grandchildren is not here today, which we are very sorry. And although we've all had a nice Christmas, and together after Christmas and have a Christmas dinner is really a pleasure. Fred Gerlach is your recorder.
Now, Ms. Moore, where were you born?
In Hot Springs.
near Hot Springs, Arkansas. How long did you live in Arkansas?
I lived there until we moved to Texas.
Moved to Texas, huh? Well, did you have any brothers and sisters?
11 sisters and one brother.
11 sisters and one brother. Well, back in those days, back in Arkansas, I guess you probably was raised in a log house, wasn't you?
Yes, log house.
But I don't guess that goes so good out in this country, where the wind blows all the time.
Nope.
If you had 11 sisters, I bet there was some sewing to do around that place. You didn't buy your clothes back in those days, did you?
No, my mother made cloth when I was small. We made her everyday clothes.
Spun them out of your own wool or cotton and made them yourself.
Us girls would spin the thread.
Well, it looks like they'd all be the same color. Did you use something to dye them with?
We dyed them different colors.
Different colors. And what they used for dye?
They used blue, and they called it.
Just bark and stone
bark
and that kind of stuff to dye it with?
Coppers.
Coppers to dye your clothes with. Well, I bet they was pretty clothes back.
Yes, they were pretty and they were warm.
I bet they was. Well, did you grow their own wool and cotton on your place?
Yes, we grew the wool. I don't think we did the cotton.
I noticed you said you had 11 sisters and one brother. How many sisters you got living?
Five.
Five sisters living today.
Yeah.
And your brother not living?
No, he died in 1939.
1939. Now, are you among the oldest ones or the youngest ones of the 12 girls?
Next to the youngest.
Next to the youngest. Well, 12 girls, you'd have a pretty good-sized choir there, wouldn't you?
Yes, our daddy would make us sing for him of a night, and the people around said they could hear us singing 2 and 3 miles from home.
Is that a fact? Well, I'm sure a family of that size really enjoyed each other back in those days.
We had lots of fun together.
Now then, back in those days, we didn't have modern automobiles and paved roads, and you didn't get very far out of the community other than to Sunday school and church and possibly to singing after on Sunday afternoon. How'd you manage to meet your husband?
Well, we went to school together.
To the school together, huh?
Yes.
What was the name of the school?
Whittington.
Whittington Schoolhouse. What, is it a log house?
No, it was a plank house.
How many teachers do you have?
One.
One teacher. Taught the whole school.
Taught the whole school.
I wonder if the old schoolhouse is still there.
No, I think the schoolhouse is burned down.
Have you been back there in the last few years?
We were back there this last summer.
How'd you like it back there?
Too hot.
Did it have the old country changed any?
Changed a lot.
I guess the paved roads and modern transportation has brought the communities closer together.
Paved roads and nice schoolhouses and nice churches.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. This is being recorded December 28th, 1947, in the home of Mrs. Moore. Your recorder is Fred Gerline.
There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles away. Only Uncle Sam's great heroes get to go there. Well, I wish that I could also live someday. I'd see Lincoln, Custer, Washington, and Perry, Nathan Hale, Colin Kelly, too. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere, waving o'er this land of heroes brave and true. In this war with its mad schemes of destruction, have our country fair and our sweet liberty. By the mad dictator leaders of corruption, can't the U.S. use a mountain boy like me? God gave me the right to be a free American, and for that precious right I'd gladly die. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere. That is where I want to live when I die. Though I realize I'm crippled, that is true, sir. Please don't judge my courage by my twisted leg. Let me show my Uncle Sam what I can do, sir. Let me help to bring the axis down a peg. If I do some great deed, I will be a hero. and a hero brave is what I want to be. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere. In that heaven there should be a place for me.
Hey, Blondie. Tell our own heaven to worry, mamma mia, worry, dada. Good job, here, good at that, if I'm happy, I can't bend to do. Teacher, go, you lose, caparo, we do what? Here, do we, there's a lot of woman, money, dana. Here's the top of a day, I just got there, a lot of money. I remember you, you're the one who made what you stop to, up to you. Kisses ago, I remember two of distant breath and stars that fell like rain out of the blue when my life is through. And the angels asked me to recall the thrill of them all. And I shall tell them I remember you.
That was Diggle.
Me mama cantaba, la canzone di canto. Oh, cute.
This is Donna Noir, Camp Ferncliff. Now we will sing our camp song.
What do you like best at camp?
Swimming and cookout and baseball.
What have you learned in swimming?
Float and swim.
Who are some of your friends?
Linda Tassett. Hi, Donna. Ruthie Andrews. Hi, Donna. And Donald Rick.
Hi, Donna.
Do you have a good time at camp?
Yes. We will sing cat.
I know we've got a big kick out of it. This is January the 1st, 1942, so 20 minutes after 1. Is that right?
Well, I hope you have a nice New Year's, prosperous, and I hope it don't take you away very far, because we want you kids close to us. Take good care of Al Marie, and be sure and get her a good place to stay, because she's a mighty sweet girl. Well, you know, we are having a wonderful time here tonight, broadcasting over this new apparatus that Mr. Perks has. Oh, I tell you, it's wonderful. Got a radio and all of it together, and oh my, I tell you, it's something. Well, we had to...
Hurry up, Thomas. No doubt you can tell that we are pretty full. We just had a big feed, so it's kind of hard to sing.
Remember what I told you about writing to me. I'll write you an answer once you write me a letter to answer. Hello, kids. This is Grady. I'll be good. We'll be seeing you when you come home.
There's old man, Grady. He wants to talk to you.
Yeah, I just got a New Year's resolution. I'm going to quit playing that crazy horse game.
Well, you got to meet tonight. That's the reason. Do you understand? Here's Mrs. Perch. She wants to talk to you.
Hello, Alan Marie. How you like it down there? I hope it's nice. Yeah, I'll be seeing you when you come home.
Well, I guess it's up to me to do all the talking, but however, I appreciate this getting a chance to hear even hear my voice. I think it's wonderful, don't you? It sounds kind of squeaky at times, but anyhow, it's not too full of hot mush, is it? Well, you know, I think we'd better sign off here and go home. Don't you think we had? It's almost 1:30 now, and I'm awful sleepy, and I've got a lot of work to do tomorrow. So, you know, we'll miss you and making out all these reports this year. But anyhow, we'll get along without you, so you have a good time. Take good care of Don, and don't eat too much. I think you eat every time you wrote this letter, you had to eat. Well, anyway, happy Sydney New Year to both of you, and be good children. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Hello, radio audience. This is station PERKS, Richmond, Indiana. We just gave birth to a new child, 1943. Happy New Year to everybody. Well, we are enjoying the beginning of this new year sitting around the fireplace in this lovely home, eating crackers, pig's feet, and cheese. Well, everyone here is in the mood for singing. You will now hear the wonderful voices of Della, Edna, Dell, Jim, Perks, and Little Walter. The first song you will hear on this program is Love's Old Sweet Song.
Just a song at twilight, when the lights are low, and the flickering shadows softly come and go. Though the heart be weary, sad the day,
we'll sing Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition.
Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition, and we'll all stay free.
Oh,
the sky's hot and fetid. You gotta give me credit. Son of a gun, but never was me.
Bucky, I had one interesting experience. A group of my friends and I decided to go into New York to the Story Club, as we've all lived in New York all our lives and never seen this place. As we went into the club, a large car drew up, and a very beautifully dressed woman stepped out, followed by a short man. They sat down at a table near us, and we later found out that she was Tallulah Bankhead. All during the evening, she was receiving phone calls, and the waiter would bring in one of those portable telephones,
and she talked over it. Finally, a man came in calling her name, and she had to go on for her play that she's appearing in New York. Then another interesting person we saw Dorothy Lamour sitting over in the corner with her agent and another man. She was very beautifully dressed, and although they were sitting there, they didn't seem to be enjoying themselves very much. I thought the whole experience was very interesting, but now that I've once seen it, I don't know if I'd want to go back. You've really seen all you want to see once you're there.
Well, did you see any more interesting people?
I think that was all we saw. At least that was all we recognized.
February 24, 1947 is an evening to be remembered by 11,500 spectators at Purdue University. They were watching a typical Big Nine basketball game with both teams holding slim leads at times. Halftime saw Purdue leading Wisconsin by 1 point, which might have indirectly caused the death of 3 students. As the team left the floor, virtually all the spectators rose to cheer the Purdue team. At one end of the floor stood a new set of bleachers seating 4,000 students. Amid the wild cheering came frenzied screams and crackling of timber. The new bleachers had collapsed, plummeting down through the center first, engulfing a majority of the students. Then the sides fell in, imagining having possibly 60 tiers of seats back down upon your head. Roger Gelhausen must have had a feeling of being stampeded by hundreds of horses, as he was the first one to fall through. When the debris was cleared away, he got up, walked a few feet, and toppled over dead. Within the minutes following the tragedy, ambulances from the city were waiting to transport the injured to hospitals. An alert announcer had seen the bleachers fall and put a radio call for help, stating that doctors would be needed. Following instructions of the field house announcer, the other spectators filed out of the way. XGIs used some of their war training to good advantage and helped extract fellow students from the rubble. All during the night, students were being treated for broken legs, arms, and back, plus minor bruises. After this unfortunate accident, people started blaming almost anything for the mishap. Indiana's governor caused immediate investigation to see what the cause was that fluffed out the lives of 3 students. They're trying to find out if the construction company was at fault or if the students were too violent in the cheering. Whatever the cause was, basketball will continue to draw a large crowd to overtaxed field houses. This action should start the ball rolling to build bigger field houses.
Thank you.
Bridgewater, home of Thomas Hawkins.
Yeah, I should be.
What do I say?
We're out looking for a beautiful 8-room house for $28 a month. It is now, we'll have to step outside. We'll step up to our knees in California dew. However, it's a very pleasant day. We're preparing to dig a swimming pool, yes, in the backyard for little Gus and little Timmy Hawkins. What? I can keep going? Can you play these things back? Come on, let's get in.
You're doing all right. You keep going.
So as I say, we're still looking for this sensual palatial home. And although we've had no success up to this particular moment, and I'm going out of words, I should give you a description of possible one. You remember that? Timmy, come over here and listen, huh? Come over and say hello. Timmy, I think Timmy's bashful. Huh? Timmy. Timmy, come on over and tell me your name and how old you are and what you've been doing all day. You've got to come over if you're going to let me get put in your bed. Am I going to go to sleep in your bed?
Johnny Denman singing. Johnny, what are you going to sing? Oh, right out loud.
It was only an old beer bottle a-floating on the foam. An old beer bottle many a mile from home. And in this old beer bottle was a message written on. Who finds this old beer bottle finds the beer all gone.
Well, Tommy, I had a good game with your golf clubs yesterday. Played with the boss. We played for beers on the last two holes, and I lost. I thought it was a good policy to let the boss win two beers on the last two holes. And inasmuch as he gave me a little promotion the night before, plus a little extra dough, I thought I'd better treat him nice. Of course, he appreciated it. Now, let's see.
Well, John, I think that's pretty damn nice of you being as good as that to your boss, because he's been real nice to you. But that 126 for 18 holes and 112 for 18 holes doesn't exactly sound like you were doing each other any favors. That's a hell of a lot of strokes. You should have gone around about four times for those. So, come on, let's lie a little bit, Johnny. You can get a little nonsense in it someplace. Come on.
I don't know what the hell to talk about, Tommy. Well, the last 18 holes was, I was pretty tired, and the bus got to me, and, Muehlbach, very good. Muehlbach Brewer. Mm-hmm. Bill Lotus liked it, too. I think you'll like it better than Budweiser. Better than Eastside, maybe.
All right. If you're just tuning in, welcome. You're listening to the Nothing Is Real Radio Hour on Wave Farms Transmission Arts Programming. This is Sam Sebrin, and we just heard a selection of Recordio home recordings with scratches, skips, and all, made on 78 RPM discs in the 1940s. Shout out to my friend Alex, who turned me on to Recordios, an incredible world of oral history and radio and home recording history. So next, we're going into the now, and we're going to hear a new piece called Hydrophonics, which I've composed using a hydrophone mic to capture all sorts of underwater sounds that are carefully collaged together. My version of home recording. When I was recording in the Hudson River this spring, I could not believe how frequently the sound of boat engines appeared. Listen, when you hear an engine start, that's not a car. That's the sound underwater of a boat starting up 100 feet away. Sound waves travel 5 times faster in water than in air, and also sound transmits farther in water. So, rather than the soothing sounds of ocean waves or babbling brooks, this piece reflects man and machine in nature, such as our own Navy, as well as other countries using LFAS, low-frequency active sonar, to detect submarines. LFAS is the loudest sound ever put into the world's oceans, and it has killed whales, dolphins, and other marine life in recent years. So, we'll hear a taste of LFAS and other underwater noise pollution. Also contained in this collage, I was surprised to hear my underwater mic capturing the above-ground sound of an Amtrak train horn from nearly a mile away. Again, remarkable how water carries sound waves. So, check this new piece out, Hydrophonics. It's made from the Hudson River, from Murderer's Creek in Athens, where I live, from a toilet flushing, and many other sources. All recordings are as is, with no post-production effects added. However, some effects were used at the time of recording at some locations. Here's Hydrophonics. Enjoy.
Thank you. Thank you.
You just heard sounds I recorded underwater to make a composition called Hydrophonics. This is Sam Sebring on the Nothing Is Real Radio Hour, heard every fifth Saturday, 2 to 3 p.m. on Wave Farm WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Keep listening.
Radio audience, eating crackers, pig's feet and cheese.